You ponks, I hate this time of year. Freezing outside, nothing to do. Turnip gruel for tea, and 11 days still before Christmas. Oh well, I think I'll go and wake up the tortoise again.
Tasty! Our food magazine!
Riveting Robins! My winter special harpoon magazine's arrived. Just as well for Torty.
All aboard for this week's edition of the Harpoon. A magazine for young and old across the English-speaking world, with 6 color plates and numerous black and white illustrations. Price 7 pence halfpenny net and available throughout the empire. All rights reserved.
Harpooners, your old chum, the editor, here, tucking into a bag of hot chestnuts. Outside Harpoon House. Delicious. Well, winter's finally upon us, and by Jiminy, have we got a bulging brazier of laughter and learning for you in this bumper seasonal special. Captain Bonnet's back with blubber sculpting for the menopausal, with outdoor pursuits indoors, an advent calendar, how to build an uphill sledge, and the first enthralling half of our Inglenook intrigue, The Boy Who Saw St. Nicholas. Plus, of course, a glacier of giggles in a frosty harpooner's club. A snap-happy snowball of puzzles, pranks, and motorcycle sidecar insulation debates. Happy wintry wonderment to you.
Excuse me, Governor, you ain't paid for your nuts.
I don't have to. I'm important.
What's this little square door in the corner of the page?
Harpoon Advent Calendar.
Jolly gee, wonder what's inside this one.
The birth of our Saviour foretold.
Well, madam, I have the results of the tests. You are 3 months pregnant. So, name of father?
Well, you see, yes.
Oh, dear.
Ladies, fed up with lashing out pounds on expensive winter clothing? Then you need Mulligatawny's False Clothes. Following our successful guide on how to imitate silk stockings by simply drawing a line of ink up your leg, Mulligatawny's are now proud to introduce a new range of other false seasonal fashions. For example,
paint on fur coats. Yes, simply apply brown paint to the upper torso and you will fool the most observant of neighbors.
I painted my body with a Mulligatawny fur coat and hosted a Masonic tea. I was the talk of Bolton.
This is Zed Breath, Huddersfield.
Also available are paint-on hats, scarves, shoes and spectacles.
Not suitable outdoors.
Outdoor pursuits indoors. A series of summer activities which you can perform in the winter. Monday, cross-country running.
Get Big Sister to cover the hall carpet with leaves, twigs, earth and snails from the garden. Ask Mother for a bowl of water and a cheese grater. Then run gaily up and down, stepping in the bowl occasionally to simulate splashing in puddles and grazing your shins now and then with the cheese grater.
Hello there, your old chum back again. Did you know this is the male robin redbreast's idea of a beautiful, well-dressed lady? Ha, ha, ha! Or as the male robin would say... Ha, 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 ha! Randy Little...
Oh, look. The robin's wing lifts up to make another advent door.
Harpoon Advent Calendar.
Mummy, Mother
ensures her chattering brood are well muffled up for winter.
Harpoon Advent Adventure.
The Boy Who Saw St. Nicholas.
Being a thrilling tale of skullduggery and Santa Claus in two parts. By Angela Poppinjay Kisso, author of 2½ Whirligigs, A Cat for the Kaiser, and Dr. Blood's Cold Collation. Part the first. Topham on the Trail.
Young Master Topham de Winter III sat idly on the lioness rug in the playroom of his father's mansion, tired eyes peering down at the lush parchment in his hands. Compiling one's Christmas present list could be such a bore.
Ah, how irksome life can be. Ah, well, at least I'm not an orphan. Not quite, anyway.
Meanwhile, on the roof, something was afoot.
Is you sure this is a good idea?
Just pass us the coal sack and be quick about it.
Right, now,
which chimney? Ah!
Oh, blimey! Someone's bound to hear that.
No, they're not. How's me costume look?
Ah, if I didn't know yet, I'd think you was old St. Nicholas himself.
But somebody had heard the dislodged tile. Topham. He raced down the ornate four-story spiral staircase to his father's study. The embittered baron sat surrounded by glasses and a half-empty decanter.
Napoleon Brandy, my only friend. Into the flames with you.
Father, did you hear a noise just now? From without?
What kind of noise, Topham? The howl of chill December winds. A lone cat crying at the moon. Or was it an imagined whisper from your poor, sweet, saintly yet tragically consumptive mother, God rest her soul.
No, more like a tile falling off the roof.
Then I heard it not. To bed with you, Topham, and have the maid bring another dozen brandy glasses.
But in another silent room, its furniture covered with sheets, a red-coated intruder emerged from a disused fireplace.
Perish it! Well, blooming chimney of filthy fireplace. God, where's the lights in here? Door. Ah! Ho.
Father?
Oh, Topham, why torture me so? Do I not provide you with enough? The massive house, the servants, toys, horses, women, opium, the vast fortune you will inherit sure as night follows day. Or is it all mere dust when I can't bring your dear mother back? Is that it, Topham? Is that it?
No, Father, no. I just thought I heard a noise in the conservatory.
I heard it not. To bed, Topham. To bed!
That's all the brandy glasses used up, sir.
Oh, damn it! Bring me some more decanters.
Up on the roof, meanwhile, a white-bearded figure emerged from a chimney.
Grab hold of this sack. Oh, it weighs a ton. Come on, let's go back.
Topham stared from the attic window as the men scurried away across the rooftops. Santa? So long before Yuletide? Surely not. And who was his chum in the cap and pearly tunic? No reindeer, that was for sure. And what was in the bulging coal sack? Father must be alerted.
Father! But wait! Why do you fling the furniture in the fire, sir?
Not now, Topham. No more, I beg you.
But I've just seen...
Help me with this chaise longue.
Father!
I can't bring her back, Topham. No one can.
It's nothing to do
Be
with...
Be strong, my son. Goodbye.
And the boy watched in abject horror as his father plunged himself into the flames. In numb confusion, Topham dashed to the silent, snow-laden streets. The tiny tycoon ran and ran and ran and ran until... He looked up, stopped, and realized that he was quite lost. And in his nightshirt.
Somebody approaching. I'll duck into this doorway. Santa and his costermonger chum. Or more likely a pair of cunning Christmas crooks, I'll wager.
His double bereavement forgotten, Topham emerged curious from the shadows. But Tessie looked up. His little pampered face turned white as the snow beneath his finely manicured toes. Above the doorway was an old tattered sign which bore two terrible words. The Orphanage.
Who is the counterfeit Sir Nicholas and his distinctly non-Arctic helper? What is in their coal sack and why have they brought it to an orphanage? Will Master Topham find his way home, or will he, now parentless, also end up in this dread institution? And will the tile that fell from the roof ever be replaced? Or will there always be a tiny hole where a bat or perhaps some sort of small bird can get inside the attic and live there innocuously for the rest of its natural life? Find out next week in the second and final part of The Boy Who Saw St. Nicholas. Harpoon How To. The Reverend A. Morris, author of How to Build a Pencil Box, How to Build a Windmill, How to Build a Suspension Bridge, and How to Build a Lazy Susan, this week tells us how to build something.
How to build an uphill sledge. Good afternoon. How often have you said, goodness me, how I yearn for a sledge that will go uphill? So today I'm going to tell you how to build one. Wood. Go to a woodyard. Point at some pieces of wood and say to the fellow, how much is this wood? Once you've purchased your wood, you...
Figure one. A pile of wood.
Assemble them according to the following diagram. Note especially the holes in each plank with nails floating next to them on a trail of dotted lines.
Figure two. The planks of wood floating beside faint dotted lines being assembled.
And there you have it, a fine uphill sledge, looking for all the world exactly like a downhill one, but for one vital component, a piece of string, which, when tied to the sledge, will enable you to pull it up the hill with only minor fuss and spinal injury. And when you've arrived, puffing and blowing at the top, simply sit on the sledge and slide quickly down to the bottom, and the uphill fun can begin all over again. Good afternoon.
The Life Cycle of the Icelandic Woodlouse, drawn by Miss Valerie Hastings.
Figure one. In early December, the Icelandic woodlouse is born. Figure two. The woodlouse knits itself a cocoon to protect itself from the ravages of winter. Figure three. The louse hibernates for 4 months. Figure four. The louse emerges from its cocoon, metamorphosed into a fox. Figure five. The fox attempts to mate with a fellow woodlouse.
Sorry.
Figure six. The species of Icelandic woodlouse becomes extinct.
Next week, the life cycle of Mr. Disraeli.
Outdoor pursuits indoors. Summer activities in winter. Wednesday, strawberry picking.
Ask Mother for some sellotape, a basket, and a pot of strawberry jam from the parlour. Fish out all the pieces of strawberry you can find in the pot and get Big Sister to sellotape them to the banister at even intervals. Then, basket in hand, delightedly pick the strawberries off the banister, taking them to Mother to make a lovely strawberry jam.
Choose Your Goose with Nurse Dennis. Our household correspondent gives hints on poultry purchase. With more help from little Bobby.
Hello, my dearios. As Yuletide approaches, we're in the poulterers for a very important task.
Festive goose selection of...
A simple enough feat, you may imagine. But how many times have you taken delivery of a bird only to find it's not fit for consumption? Here are some telltale signs of a bad goose.
Number one.
An appalling smell of rotting poultry, sometimes accompanied by thousands of maggots swarming over the goose.
Number two.
Any sign that the goose has been stored in an unsuitable place. Watch out for paint, library tickets, feather dusters, and dog hairs.
Number three.
There's just one more thing to check for. Slap the goose, Bobby. I thought as much.
Next week, part two of this feature. Utilize your goose. How to make remnants of your bird into soups, stews, ornaments, and even a lazy Susan.
Ooh, look. Another door behind this title.
Our Boone Advent Calendar. King Herod's famous census of Nought B.C.
Mary, darling, do we have to pass through a communal landing area to reach our bathroom?
Oh, Joseph, census schmensus.
Harpoon science.
They came from the sky.
Being the story of one man's quest for two identical snowflakes. By Dr. Max Box, author of Caring for Your Toad.
My quest for two identical snowflakes began in the summer of 1894. It was a particularly hot summer that year, with very little snowfall. I decided to delay my quest for several months until the winter.
Plate one. Dr. Box waiting for some snow.
December the 13th. Hurrah! After scouring the weather reports in the Times, I learned of a small blizzard in Cumbria. With all due speed, I hastened northward and made inquiries. Several people said yes, they had seen some snow recently. Not much, true, but enough to be going on with. Unfortunately, all I managed to find was a small mound of slush. I did see some similarities between portions of it and published my findings in the Journal of Slush Studies, incorporating Ice Cube Monthly. As a result, I was invited to several interesting public lectures, where the food was marvelous. January the 4th. Yippee. At last there appeared what the great French scientist Lavoisier has described as snow, and the mammoth task of classifying each separate flake began. The years passed. A minor excitement occurred in 1910, when I found that Flake Edward bore a startling resemblance to Flake Jenny Louise. Alas, my euphoria was short-lived. I discerned that on the upper left ridges of Flake Jenny Louise, there were two clockwise spirals I hadn't detected before. Desperate for scientific success, I manufactured a forgery. For one brief and joyful interlude, I was hailed as the new Darwin, until an eagle-eyed student in the Department of Sleet spotted the glue. Spurned, I took lodgings in Clerkenwell and spent my days rummaging through piles of snow, holding each flake up to the window and shouting, "Be similar, you miniature bastards!" And so they brought me here, to a narrow cell in Bedlam, where, after 15 years of misery, it seems that finally a miracle has happened. A few minutes ago, two snowflakes drifted through the bars of my window. Two flakes identical in every last acute and obtuse angle of their tiny bodies. And so, at peace at last, I await the morrow, when I will present them, Jonathan and Jonathan, to the scientific world. For tonight, we sleep happy. Me is spending my last night on this wretched narrow bed, and my two flakes safe and secure on top of the Primus Stone.
And so ends the story of Max Box, the man who did not, as far as he can prove, discover two identical snowflakes.
Outdoor pursuits indoors. Summer activities in winter. Thursday, butterfly catching.
Get Big Sister to put on a large pair of wings, which you have made from cardboard, glue, and crepe paper. Then chase her around the house with a jar and net, and attach her with a pin to the page of a large book.
Harpoon Advent Calendar.
Horace the Haymaker, deprived of summer, practices his scything.
Another slice of turkey, dear.
Oh, whoops, mind the baby, Horace.
The case of the haunted moustache. Part the second in our gripping winter's tale of satanic stubble. The story so far. Famed archaeologist Professor Blizzard has returned from Mesopotamia with the facial bristles of a long-dead king and a curious carved stone tablet. Finding themselves shadowed, as they think, by a mysterious headless midget and a three-legged dog, Blizzard and his friend Constance Brickwell suspect a curse and dispatch the moustache, now growing, to the British Museum, where, hours later, a warder is throttled in strange circumstances. Is the moustache possessed? Will the midget and dog return? And does the stone tablet contain the key to the mystery? Read on.
British Museum. No one knows who were indeed what was responsible. No one knows who were indeed what was responsible.
Severe facial contortions, sir. Closure of the eyes and general immobility of both the limbs and the torso.
In a nutshell, Doctor?
He's dead.
Excuse me. Inspector, we came as quickly as we could. Professor Blizzard.
Hey, we would have been here sooner, only we couldn't get a cab. It's the curse, I tell you, the curse.
Calm yourself, Bickwell. Now, Inspector.
All the evidence suggests, sir, that the warder was strangled by a long, bristly, whippy sort of an object.
Oh, you mean like a rope? Such as this bit lying in the corner?
Exactly, sir.
Clever, Bickwell, but unnecessarily complex. Clearly, the infernal moustache of Zargon the Great, which I dispatched to this vault, has come to life and begun an orgy of bristly destruction.
Brilliant, Blizzard.
Semi-complicated, my dear Bickwell. And where is the moustache, Inspector?
Missing, sir. Assumed stolen.
Stolen? No, Inspector. Fled.
Of course.
Come, Bickwell, to Hampshire.
But why?
Because I live there. We must return to the stone tablet at once. Perhaps its decodement will provide some vital clues to this grisly debacle.
All night, Blizzard toiled in his study, hunched over the tablet with nothing but a glass of brandy and a Mesopotamian primer, while I sat before the fire, leafing idly through a gold-tooled Martin Chuzzlewit. At midnight, I heard him playing Beethoven's Third Horn Concerto on the comb and tissue paper, a sure sign that he was deep in meditation. Then, as dawn broke...
Eureka!
You mean...
Yes, this is what I've got so far. God degel eerst ad denar dega on ruti dek dim degelenoid dis ruke lach seet ledifni naich den ilure per as ruski bude etifi ekos zomers derka seet fo terstis et wong jam hitjaf et et of fu etsot ilnlo.
Good Lord! What does it mean?
No idea.
Wait a minute. Look. If you turn the tablet upside down...
It's in English. Just as I thought.
Read it out, old man.
Only those of the true faith may know the secret of the sacred moustache. If the whiskers are purloined by an infidel, they shall be cursed by a one-legged midget with no head and a three-legged dog.
Excuse me, sir. A rather short gentleman with a limping pet just called asking if we were throwing out any old stone tablets at present. They left a card, just in case. Abdul's Babylonian Emporium. A dingy Arabian store full of music boxes and marionettes in a foggy back street in Limehouse above the notorious Dog and Midget public house, sir.
The Dog and Midget, Blizzard.
Aha! What an amusing, though clearly irrelevant, coincidence, Bickwell. Let's take a break from the case and wander down there, shall we? I've always liked puppets. Here we are, Bickwell. Abdul's Emporium. Music boxes, marionettes, and... moustaches.
My God, Blizzard! This could be dangerous.
Yes. Let's split up for no reason and put the wind up ourselves.
Good idea.
Anybody here? I say?
Good God, what's that?
Oh, I see. Those mechanical laughing sailors. I thought perhaps I...
Looking for something, sir?
Yes, I'm looking for a music box. Do you have one with a moustache?
A moustache, sir?
Yes, a moustache.
A moustache?
Yes, a moustache.
We have this, sir. When you open the lid... A miniature figure of Zargon the Great rises up and waxes his whiskers.
May I? Good God. Just as I...
be the bristly fate of the hair-haunted professor? Is the moustache possessed and roaming the snowbound streets of London in search of victims? And will we ever get around to explaining the headless midget and the three-legged dog? Find out in next week's Christmas conclusion to The Case of the Haunted Moustache. Outdoor pursuits indoors. Summer activities in winter. Friday, being sent to stay with your maiden aunt in Shropshire.
Go and stay with your maiden aunt in Shropshire. Then send mother a postcard blaming big sister for all the earth, leaves, shells, sand, salt, water, glue, crepe paper and snails on the carpets and the jam defacing the banister.
Harpoon back pages.
Who's been polishing the sun, rubbing out the clouds of grey? They must have known just how I like it. Everything's coming my way.
Hip, hip. Well, last of all, as usual, it's that good old jamboree bag of jollity, the Harpooner's Club. First up, pin the nostril on the Arctic fox. Cut out a small white circle from the blank page below. Shove a blindfold round your forehead, then spend many happy hours making optimistic thrusts at the picture of the noseless beast opposite.
I'll try this. Cover my eyes so.
No, I don't think he needs another hole there. Try again. And lastly, answers to last week's queries. H. Musson, Edinburgh, Scotland. Squally showers at first with a slight rise in temperature towards the latter part of the day. Mrs. Clarkson, Tadcaster? I wouldn't imagine so. Columbus never even went to Tadcaster, and I doubt if he'd have left a kettle lying around. B. Quip, Salisbury. The phrase decorating the Christmas tree refers to the hanging of coloured baubles, candles, stars and fairies from the boughs of a festive pine. Not painting it with emulsion, hanging curtains on it and installing a small kitchen in its lower branches. Stop it. You're being stupid. Well, I'm afraid that's all for this week. So here's a tumultuous toodle-pip from all your chums. Wasn't Captain Bonnet on form, eh? What a man. Do make sure you reserve your bumper Christmas issue, won't you? Well, this is your old chum buttoning up his topcoat, slipping on his moose-lined mittens, fixing a pair of miniature snowplows to his boots and saying, Imperatus Foundationis Blubberum, hip hip!
Who's been polishing the sun, rubbing out the clouds of grey? They must have known just how I like it. Oh, oh, come on, let's go.
The Harpoon is printed and published weekly by the proprietors, London W1. The magazine was penned by Julian Dutton and Peter Bainham. The characters were lavishly depicted by Susie Brann, Alistair McGowan, Mary Elliott Nelson, Peter Bainham and Julian Dutton. The Harpoon was produced on stretched goat's vellum by Sarah Smith. All rights reserved.
Everything's coming my way. Polishing the sun, they must have known just how I like it. Everything's coming my way.